heartbreaking numbers from the new coronavirus pandemic. It has now claimed close to 61,000 lives, with cases moving up to 1.1 million plus. The United States holds a sad record, the most COVID-19 infections in the world, nearly 280,000 and almost 7,200 deaths. The state of New York a short time ago reported 113,000 coronavirus cases, up 10,000 in a single day. The state has had about 3,000 deaths. On the bright side, Governor Andrew Cuomo says two-thirds of those hospitalized for the virus in his state have been discharged. Cuomo has signed an order allowing him to force the transfer of unused ventilators from hospitals and businesses for use where they are needed. Given that New York City is the country's pandemic epicenter, it seems apparent that is where the seized equipment would end up. In badly suffering Europe, Italy and Spain combined have lost 26,000 lives among nearly a quarter of a million infections. France, with 82,000 cases, has become the latest nation to overtake China, where the pandemic began. France has lost 6,500 people to the virus so far. The figures come from Johns Hopkins University as it follows the pandemic worldwide. The latest to be hit, the Falkland Islands, a remote British territory in the South Atlantic, where Napoleon died in exile. One patient is said to be in stable condition, and the Falklands chief medical officer says she is working with the British military to trace the victim's contacts. Medical workers across Europe find themselves struggling to save critically ill patients. There are obstacles, a surge of hospital admissions, dwindling supplies of medications, improvised personal protective equipment, and a severe shortage of everything from ventilators to masks and gloves. The head of Italy's hospital doctors union fought back tears as he told reporters in Rome about the psychological trauma of the pandemic among his medical colleagues, noting reports that two Italian nurses had committed suicide. This is VOA News. At Egypt's main cancer hospital in Cairo, 17 medics now have tested positive for the coronavirus, underlining the risks for those in the trenches of the battle against the disease. Here in the United States, the Trump administration has issued new public health guidance. People are being told to use cloth masks on their faces when out in public, though President Donald Trump says he won't use one, suggesting that it just wouldn't look right. Mr. Trump emphasizes that the advice issued by his own Centers for Disease Control is voluntary. President Trump has also rejected the idea from the country's most highly acclaimed infectious diseases expert, Dr. Anthony Fauci, that he issue a nationwide stay-at-home order. Mr. Trump said he trusted state governors to make those decisions. Many of them have refused to impose wholesale restrictions on people and businesses. Others have issued limited orders, which allow bars and restaurants to remain open and permit large church gatherings, despite the risks involved. Dr. Fauci, a highly trusted member of the White House Coronavirus Task Force, insists there should be a national stay-at-home mandate to help stem the spread of COVID-19 into states that are so far largely untouched by the virus, but which could be fertile ground for new outbreaks. The United States says its embassy in Moscow is trying to arrange charter flights to get American citizens home from Russia, where the COVID-19 caseload is approaching 5,000. A planned Aeroflot flight from Moscow to New York on Friday was canceled, as the plane was on the taxiway. Russia has banned all international flights, including those designed to bring its citizens back home. With its own growing number of COVID-19 cases now at 38,000 and deaths at 3,600, the UK is being told by a science advisor it may be possible to ease the country's lockdown by the end of May. It was put in place in late March. Meanwhile, British Prime Minister Boris Johnson remains in coronavirus isolation. Much of China came to a standstill today as flags flew at half-staff to mourn patients and medical staff lost to COVID-19, which was born in the country's Hubei province. For 3 minutes, there was a nationwide silence, broken by air raid sirens. Though its figures have been widely questioned, China says it lost 3,000 people to the pandemic, which began in the city of Wuhan. Officials there say they'll lift a travel ban next week, and some residents in Wuhan have been allowed to leave their homes for the first time since January. Hammered by the coronavirus developments, American markets ended the week with another set of losses as the U.S. economy suffers the devastating results of a dramatic shutdown. 4.4% of the workforce is idled, and some say that figure could reach 20% or more in the weeks and months ahead. More than 700,000 jobs in the U.S. were lost in March, and applications for unemployment benefits have surged by 10 million over the past 2 weeks. More news online at voanews.com. Via remote, I'm Gene Randall. VOA News.
evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington, D.C.
There is going to be a major movement restriction. Citizens are urged to stay in their homes. Vehicular movement, all kinds of public transport will not be on the road. They will all be taking a holiday because the drivers or the operators will themselves be in lockdown.
The Sierra Leonean president, Julius Maada Bio, announces a nationwide lockdown beginning Sunday.
The government has a responsibility to tell Nigerians that within this period, they cannot reduce the fuel price. That what we need now is to generate funds to carry out the activities of government.
The Nigerian main opposition party calls on the government to immediately reduce fuel prices.
And we have put it very clear that what we do is not enough. It will never be enough. We've also encouraged others to make contributions, no matter how small their contributions may be, but they will help save lives.
And the Zambian main opposition leader, Hakainde Hichilema, distributes essential items nationwide to help curb the coronavirus spread. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Sierra Leone will begin to impose a three-day nationwide lockdown beginning Sunday. President Julius Maada Bio says the move forms part of his administration's effort to combat the spread of the coronavirus. This as the government announced a second official case of the disease. Officials say the government has launched contact tracing measures, while two persons who have been infected with the disease remain in quarantine and continue to receive medical attention. For more about the lockdown, I reached Sierra Leonean Information Minister Mohamed Rahman Sowore in the capital, Freetown.
Good day, Peter. Indeed, it is true that His Excellency President Julius Maada Bio has declared a 3-day nationwide lockdown. The essence is to be able to break the chain of transmission, having recorded 2 positive cases of the COVID-19. It also is going to be a fundamental baseline to guide government in next steps. In his recent address to the nation, he did say every measure was on the table. So, in the last few days, there have been clarion calls from various segments of the society for him to extend the lockdown period to 14 days or 21 days, as the case may be. He being the meticulous person he is, he wants us to try the 3 days, during which time we'll get a clear indication of whether we have community spread of the COVID-19 or not. That will determine next steps.
Apart from the president's address, what is your ministry doing to help spread this message and educate as well as sensitize Sierra Leoneans about this lockdown?
Peter, a lot is happening beyond my ministry alone. We see this as a Sierra Leonean war against COVID-19. Our ministry is providing the leadership, but all other hands are on deck. Very recently, the government formed an integrated crisis communication and community preparedness group, which incidentally is led by the Ministry of Information. In that group, you have civil society organizations, you have the Sierra Leone Association of Journalists, you have development partners, and many more. Our business is to ensure that we make available to members of the public any and every information relating to COVID-19, including signs and symptoms, preventive measures, and any other things that will keep the disease from spreading. More importantly, we have also been charged with the responsibility of doing community social mobilization. So we are working with city and district councils across the country to ensure that we are able to mobilize the much-needed awareness raising for community ownership. We have also, beyond that, been using technology to ensure that we reach to every Sierra Leonean citizen. Already, we have whitelisted our Facebook page, which is linked to Messenger, and in coming days, we shall be developing an app which will automatically get all messages relating to COVID-19 to every Sierra Leonean subscribed on WhatsApp, which is one of the most popular social media platforms in this part of the world. So a lot is going on. We are continuing to do that. We are engaging our publics on social media, on radio and television, and of course using traditional media and putting boots on ground. So a lot is really happening in this regard. You know, just yesterday, the Honorable Vice President led a major strategic level meeting to discuss the lockdown. And the whole essence is to ensure that we are able to trace all the primary and secondary contacts of the two positive cases we already have on ground. So on the basis of that, when that is done, as a government, we can determine next steps. So this is a very critical and crucial decision.
What does the lockdown entail for the ordinary Sierra Leonean, not in the capital Freetown, but elsewhere in the countryside?
Peter, you will be amazed at the level of knowledge and understanding of the people you call ordinary people about lockdowns. Remember, we survived Ebola, and the same ordinary people had to be locked down on several occasions. We wish we could have avoided this, which is why His Excellency President Biya tried his very best to ensure that we kept coronavirus out of here. But alas, like somebody mentioned, the fortress has been breached. So the lockdown means every person is going to be restricted to their homes. There is going to be a major movement restriction. Citizens are ordered to stay in their homes. Vehicular movement, all kinds of public transport will not be on the road. They'll all be taking a holiday because the drivers or the operators will themselves be in lockdown. However, there will be reasonable exceptions. Those who will be offering essential services, for example, the military and security personnel generally, will be up and about in the streets to enforce the lockdown provisions. Also, those the medical healthcare workers will also be out up and about to ensure that they are able to deliver much needed services. Those providing social services, water, electricity, and such others will also be permitted. Again, since we intend to maintain reasonable stock levels here at all times, we will be making a special provision for those port workers to have access to their workplaces.
Mohamed Rahman Soare is the Sierra Leonean Information Minister. He spoke with me from the capital, Freetown. Nigeria's main opposition People's Democratic Party, or PDP, is calling on the government to reduce fuel prices immediately. The party says recent fuel price increases are unacceptable, especially when petroleum on the world market has sharply dropped. The PDP demanded that the government refund the monies it generated from the sale of recent fuel prices. But supporters of the ruling party say the demands of the opposition are yet another attempt to score political points. They say the PDP should be working with the government to help combat the spread of the coronavirus instead of politicking. For more about the opposition party's demands, I reach Kola Ologbodiyan, spokesperson for the PDP.
The People's Democratic Party rejects the tweaking of fuel price from 125 naira to 123 naira 50 kobo instead of the appropriate pricing of 90 naira per liter as canvassed by majority of Nigerians. Our party considers the reduction of pump price by a mere 1 naira 50 kobo as offensive, fraudulent, and a further display of cruelty and insensitivity by the All Progressives Congress to the plight of Nigerians, particularly as the nation battles the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic. As a party, the PDP is insisting that the correct price of pump price of fuel should be between 80 naira and 90 naira per liter, given the slump in the price of fuel and crude oil in the international market. Our party holds that any price beyond 90 naira is completely unacceptable, as it amounts to fleecing Nigerians of their hard-earned money at this critical time in the history of our nation.
What do you say to some critics who say the economy is bad and that the government needs the revenue generation accrued from this sale of petroleum in Nigeria?
If the government has some fears about how to raise revenue for the activities of government or for the purposes of governance, the government has a responsibility to tell Nigerians that within this period, they cannot reduce the fuel price. That what we need now is to generate funds to carry out the activities of government. They owe that responsibility to Nigerians. And that would be more acceptable
compared to the fleecing of Nigerians that's currently going on. The People's Democratic Party does not wish that the government fail in carrying out its activities. But the People's Democratic Party holds that the federal government has a duty, it has a responsibility to speak to Nigerians about the challenges that it is confronting and why it is unable to meet the needs of the people, particularly at this critical time in our history.
Well, Kola, your party is also asking for the government to refund the money it got from the sale of petroleum following the drop in prices globally. How will the government be able to achieve or meet this demand?
Well, we believe that the federal government, if it's determined to make such a refund or to heed the advice of the People's Democratic Party and also those of notable Nigerians, it can revert such fund to deployment of palliatives to help the situation as they are in Nigeria today. A lot of Nigerians whose means of living is dependent on daily earnings can no longer do their businesses because of this lockdown. And Nigerians are aware that even before the lockdown, even before the first test case, the index case of COVID-19 in Nigeria, the People's Democratic Party had been advising the government, just like many notable Nigerians too, had been advising the government on measures to take in order to fight coronavirus. But the federal government did not heed those advice. So what we are saying in essence is that if it feels compelled, or as we have demanded, if it's going to yield to our position, the federal government can reverse such funding to palliative measures.
Well, Kola, I understand the PDP is also demanding for the establishment of eminent Nigerians group to manage donations towards mitigating the spread and impact of COVID-19, ensure the palliatives get to vulnerable Nigerians without any political and bureaucratic bottlenecks. Does that mean that the party does not trust the government to administer this?
Corruption has permeated every facet of this government. And as such, there's no Nigerian out on the streets there that believe that government will use the donations from philanthropic Nigerians to the best of the interests of the ordinary Nigerians. None. And as such, we believe that government should retain its own rights within the incentives they claim they have been providing in the last 5 years, which Nigerians do not know about or cannot fail. The generality of opinion among Nigerians today is that the donation from the philanthropic individuals and bodies and associations should be put in the hands or in the purse that will be managed and run effectively by a group of eminent Nigerians, which will be decided by government. As we speak today, even the management of COVID-19, particularly in the area of creating palliatives for the vulnerable, is not felt by the downtrodden people. Our party had earlier advised government that government should ensure that it uses organs like state government, local government, churches, mosques, community-related associations and institutions in order for the palliatives to reach the people. But the government is not following in that direction. And some Nigerians are even asking that the philanthropic body should have given the money to the banks so that the banks can directly deal with the vulnerable people. Having said that, our position in the People's Democratic Party is that in order to safeguard the fund from political and bureaucratic bottlenecks, eminent Nigerians should be allowed to decide their funding and how it will get to the people.
Kola Ologbodiyan is the spokesperson for the Nigerian main opposition party, the People's Democratic Party, PDP. He spoke with me from the capital, Abuja.
Meanwhile, Nigerian human rights and civil society groups are accusing government security organizations of carrying out violence against citizens. This as the police enforce a two-week lockdown imposed by President Muhammadu Buhari. The groups say there are a growing number of video clips showing security officers beating citizens during the lockdown. They want security officers to stop beating people and to launch an independent investigation to prosecute those responsible for the violence. The Inspector General of Police has warned officers that they will be monitored while urging them to be professional and humane in enforcing the lockdown. President Muhammadu Buhari recently imposed a two-week stay-at-home directive as part of the effort to combat the spread of the coronavirus. Adefunke Adewale, an attorney with the Nigerian Human Rights Defenders Group, is representing one of the victims of the violence. She tells me the violence filed out to her client is unacceptable.
My client was assaulted by Commissioner for Water and Resources in Kogi State on the 30th of March, and it has been all over social media. I learned the supposed lady interfered in the commissioner's affair, you know, compelling him to take care of his home. His family have been left uncatered. So the commissioner decided to take law into his hands, went after the lady, beat her up. I had some talks, you know, and beat the lady up so mercilessly. It has been all over social media. All we just want is justice for Elizabeth.
Talking about justice, what kind of justice do you want? Are you calling on the authorities to investigate the commissioner and the punishment meted out to him, or are you going to press charges on behalf of your client?
Yes, the kind of justice we want is we want this honorable recall. We want him arrested and prosecuted. You know, assault on our women by high-rank politician is getting too much. The other day was the other senator that went into a sex toy shop, you know, and assaulted a lady. He beat this lady up, blue and black. You know, it was also all over social media. And much later, we heard he was sanctioned, and now he's back to the house. But this time around, we want law enforcement agency to arrest this man. We want the IG to interfere, the Inspector General of Police to interfere and arrest this man so that it can serve as deterrence to others. We can't watch violence on women, you know, keep going unabated this way. So we want him arrested, prosecuted, and possibly recalled.
What will be your next line of action in defense of your client who you said was brutalized by this state official?
If after the lockdown nothing is done, this commissioner feel is above the law and he cannot be brought the book, we'll organize a protest. We'll call on FIDA in Kogi State to march to the State House of Assembly and register our displeasure so that they can address our grievances. Kogi State politicians are taking too much. The other time was a very young, beautiful lady who was bullied, you know, out of the campaign ground. And now this. So many abuse on women by high-ranked politicians in Kogi State is getting too much. So if after the lockdown, nothing is done, we are going on a protest. Yes, we'll join the FIDA in Kogi State and march to the State House of Assembly, even the governor's office, to register our displeasure.
As a human rights lawyer, what are your views about ongoing reports or clips of videos being shown as security officers unleashing violence on citizens as they enforce the crackdown imposed by President Muhammadu Buhari recently?
Not nice at all. We are not in support of this in any way. This is not how to enforce a lockdown. Americans didn't do their own this way. UK didn't do their own this way. And other advanced countries. You know, it's sad enough you're forcing people to sit at home without any relief measure put in place by our government. It's not fair at all. Yes, we know Nigerians are very difficult to govern, but this is not just the way to go about this. You don't go about flogging people. You don't go about, you know, injuring people here and there, compelling them to sit at home. Most of these grassroots people, they get their daily meal, you know, from the streets. And it's sad enough you're keeping them to stay at home, you know, without any provision put in place. It's not nice at all. It's not. We condemn this brutality by our uniformed men. Armed forces should be called to order. This is not how to enforce a lockdown. No. this is ultra vires the provisions of human rights. No, they are violating people's rights. And we want human rights and even our Nigerian Bar Association to put in place monitoring task force to ensure people's rights are protected during this lockdown. Thank you.
Adefunke Adewale is an attorney with the Nigerian Human Rights Defenders Group. She spoke with me from the commercial capital, Lagos. Zambian main opposition leader Hakainde Hichilema says he plans to distribute more essential items to citizens as part of his effort to curb the spread of the coronavirus. Hichilema, the leader of the United Party for National Development, or UPND, also says he has suggested to the government ways to conserve scarce national resources. His remarks come as his party is working to distribute items, including hand sanitizers and soaps, across the country. But supporters of the ruling Patriotic Front have questioned why the opposition leader did not send his donation to the Ministry of Health, the body designated to receive and distribute relief items. They also called on the authorities to thoroughly test all the items. This after expressing concern that the goods could have been infected. To learn more about the objective of his donation and subsequent criticisms, I reached Hakainde Hichilema, the Zambian main opposition leader.
The motivation for the distribution of the coronavirus mitigation, materials is to help prevent the infections of our population, infection from coronavirus, which is deadly, which is not a joke. It's killing too many people across the world. And we all, as individuals, as groups, as businesses, as citizens, as a country, we must all do what is necessary to protect citizens from unnecessary infections, which could lead to deaths. That is the motivation, to save lives.
Mr. Hichilema, what has been the reaction of Zambians who have benefited from this essential items you distributed nationwide, and will this gesture continue?
A lot of Zambians have commended our action. They've commended our response to the call to action. And we've put it very clear that what we do is not enough. It will never be enough. We've also encouraged others to make contributions, no matter how small their contributions may be, but they will help save lives. We will continue what we are doing. This is only the beginning. Mind you, our corporate businesses have been doing their bit, and they will continue doing what they've been doing, and if necessary, more. And we will continue this outreach until we defeat this enemy, coronavirus. It's an enemy which must be defeated not only in Zambia, not only in Africa, but the world over, to save humanity.
What do you say to some supporters of the ruling Patriotic Front Party who are saying that your action is just purely politically motivated, just to score political points in these difficult times? They say this is unpatriotic and an affront to the people of Zambia, taking advantage of a situation such as COVID-19.
This is the malice I've talked about already. I mean, this is what I may call weird imaginations of an individual. These items that we procured are procured from bona fide producers, bona fide suppliers, the same suppliers that treasury money is being spent on to help prevent COVID. So how can somebody helping at the same time be the same individual that wants people to die? It negates common sense. It defeats common logic. Such thinking really belongs to the past. And the past, not the positive past, but the negative past. I don't think they are worth spending time on, such people. Let's move on. Let's do the work that is necessary. Let's save lives. That's the call to duty. That's the call to leadership. And we are answering that call, not because somebody is persuading us, but it's because it's a call of duty.
Hakainde Hichilema is the Zambian main opposition leader from the United Party for National Development, or UPND. He spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka. You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotty, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, the Center for Global Development has released a new report about Chinese loans to developing countries. The report analyzes loan-by-loan data on more than 2,000 Chinese government loans in more than 150 countries. It also shows a mixed picture, with China's loans having interest rates consistently higher than the World Bank, but lower than market rate. It comes as countries in Africa face the coronavirus. The disease is expected to batter the economies of African countries. To learn more about the findings regarding China's lending and developing countries' debt challenges about the coronavirus, I reached Scott Morris, senior fellow at the Center for Development and co-author of the report.
So our goal with this study was to better understand Chinese lending terms to developing countries, including those in Africa. And we did that by making use of an existing database of information that has been gathered by Aid Data at William & Mary College. And our goal was to look on a project-by-project basis and then build up from these many hundreds of projects, thousands of projects, to understand the big picture of Chinese lending, particularly in comparison to the World Bank. And the reason for that is that we understand that the World Bank has developed lending rules over the years that are sensitive to countries' ability to pay. So for low-income countries, the World Bank lends on easier terms, lower interest rates with grace periods. So it's important to compare any lender to the World Bank to understand how sensitive that lender is to its borrowers.
I understand some African leaders are concerned about political related issues that come up when they lend from the World Bank and the IMF, and that is why they seek the Chinese loans. Did this factor in your report?
We didn't try to measure the conditions on World Bank loans in comparison to Chinese loans. The idea, the perception that Chinese lending is essentially no strings attached and the World Bank uses onerous conditions. I think there's probably some truth to that, but I think it is also exaggerated. And in particular, there are conditions on Chinese lending that tend to reinforce some of the more problematic aspects of these loans, particularly the lack of transparency. So there are often confidentiality provisions on these loans that make it hard to understand basic lending terms.
Well, Scott, how can these developing countries use your report for their strategic placement in terms of negotiating for loans or for their planning purposes?
So I think in the current environment, as we face this pandemic crisis, I think it's important for these countries to, frankly, access any financing that they can from lenders. But it does suggest that they should be arguing aggressively for maximum financing from institutions like the World Bank, that they're going to need a lot of assistance, but they need it on terms that are appropriate to their circumstances. I mean, it also suggests perhaps that China, as a major lender, needs to actively be considering some form of debt relief, certainly debt rescheduling in the current environment, to ease the financing burden as these countries face the current crisis.
Talking about the current crisis, a lot of these countries are expressing concern that the crisis is putting additional pressure on the economy. Some are saying that the economic prospects are pretty bad. How can they navigate these waters using your report?
So I do think our report provides clear evidence about the nature of the debt burden that a lot of lower income countries face today, that it is not just that they've done a lot of borrowing in recent years, but the terms on those loans are less generous today. And a lot of that has been because of China's leading role as a creditor. And I think in the current crisis, it should help provide an argument for some form of debt relief with bilateral creditors like China playing a leadership role on that front. It's clear that these debts are not going to be sustainable throughout this crisis period, and there needs to be some relief. And I think we've offered evidence as to the nature of the debt burdens with higher interest rates and tougher financing terms driving a lot of these dynamics.
Well, Scott, what are the major takeaways of this report that these developing countries must take notice of in their future planning to help their economies?
I think when things return to normal in the global economy, it's going to be important for these developing countries to be more sensitive to the lending terms that they face when loans are on offer. And that doesn't just apply to Chinese government lending, which is less concessional, less favorable than the World Bank, but also commercial lenders whose terms are even tougher, frankly, than Chinese terms. So being more sensitive to what that does to a country's debt dynamics over time and being able to manage those debt risks is going to be important. And for these developing country governments, that's an obligation they have to their citizens and taxpayers.
Scott Morris is a senior fellow at the Center for Development and co-author of the report. He spoke with me from here in Washington, D.C. The Kenyan Health Ministry says a six-year-old child has died of coronavirus complications, becoming the youngest victim of the virus to die in Kenya. As of Friday, more than 120 people in Kenya have been confirmed to have COVID-19. For VOA, Ryle Ombor reports from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi.
Kenya's health ministry has confirmed the country's first death of a minor from COVID-19. Mercy Mwangangi, the chief administrative secretary at Kenya's Ministry of Health, announced the death at a news conference Friday.
I am saddened to inform you that we have lost another patient to the coronavirus disease. The person, a six-year-old male child, who was also ailing from other medical conditions and had been admitted to Kenyatta National Hospital. This now brings to four the number of those who have died as a result of this disease.
Total coronavirus cases in Kenya now stand at 122. The Ministry of Health said Thursday that some of the new cases were not imported, but were the result of community transmission. Experts have warned that Nairobi's crowded slums could be breeding grounds for the virus. The health ministry has projected that the country's coronavirus load could rise 5,000 cases by the end of April. Last week, the government imposed a daily 7 p.m. to 5 a.m. curfew, among other measures, in a bid to curb the spread of COVID-19. Preparing for tough times ahead, Kenya's Minister of Trade, Betty Maina, announced Friday that Kenya has started manufacturing masks and other equipment for health workers in order to avoid any shortages in the future.
So since last week, we have been working very hard to see if we can actually supply this within the country, because it has proved a challenge to trace them and to be able to order them around the world, because the demand from Europe, from the US, is very, very large. I'm very excited that as we announced on Sunday, the Kenyan textile industry has risen up to the task and is currently able to produce as many masks as we require.
Maina said companies also started to make personal protective gear for medical staff on the front lines against the disease. Raya Lombor for VOA News, Nairobi.
Right now, it's time for music from our African collection.
Yeshi.
Chongo inakula kwa jasho, nipatacho naridhika.
subiri kesho, zamu yangu itafika. Nenda wambie, wambie, I wish to it. Za kujisifu najua kila kukicha kwa Mungu naomba dua aso nazidisha ili nizidi kusua wakinifunika kesho nitawafua mchanga hauzikwi unaubadilisha makazi uwezi zibariziki ure utaki na kulakazi nipatacho naridhika nasubiri kesho zamu yangu itafika nenda wambie
mimi nakutamani nikupeleke nyumbani dali dali.
And that was Music from the Continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sali, reporter Douglas Impuga, and producer Saida Hamdoun, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, wisdom is not like money to be tied up and hidden. I'm your host, Peter Clote in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
This is VOA News. Via remote, I'm Gene Randall. It is another day of